previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Speaking of baseball, great transition tone. My older son last night, 2 for 3, 4 RBIs, 2 innings pitched, no earned runs, 4 Ks. How's that?
Wow. Line? That's a great line. Did you do anything to make him feel bad after the game?
I didn't. It was a rare moment in which I didn't screw anything up.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All righty then. Michael and I are socially distanced at my Uncle Benny's table. Somebody wrote in and said, to be fair, it would be 6 feet 1 inches away from you because of Michael's height. We will do a show on Monday today. We will do a show Wednesday. Next week, I may take some time off. I have not taken any time off, and I may take some time off next week. We will have Michael Wilbon on today and Jason LaCanfora on today. And I will begin, and I think this is probably appropriate, and this is local. I understand that this is local, but the passing of Joe Bugle demands a certain amount of attention here. Joe Bugle, of course, was the head hog. He was, in the Redskins' glory days, Joe Bugle was the offensive line coach. He later moved on, and in terms of his accomplishments, having coached the Oakland Raiders, I think they were in Oakland, maybe they were in Los Angeles. He coached the Raiders for a while. He coached the Cardinals for a while when they were either called the Phoenix Cardinals or the Arizona Cardinals. He only deals with teams that change their names every few years. And he had no particular success as a head coach. And that's the way it goes. That happens to people. He spent his entire career, other than those two jobs, as an assistant coach in the National Football League. And his greatest success came with the Washington Redskins, where he was the offensive line coach under Joe Gibbs the first time around, then the second time around as well. And then he stayed maybe for Jim Zorn just long enough to convince Zorn that the colors weren't the maroon and black. And then he was able to leave when Zorn said, yeah, Bugs, I got that now. He was the head hog. He came up with the term the hogs. It was like, why don't you hogs get out there and plow some land so that our running backs can go? He was in charge of the offensive line. And if you don't know the history of the Redskins, and you may not, in that period of time when they were winning Super Bowls, when Joe Gibbs did something remarkable, when he went to 4 Super Bowls and won 3 Super Bowls with 3 different quarterbacks, and I'm telling you, nobody does this. Nobody's ever done this. 3 Super Bowl wins with 3 different quarterbacks, none of whom is in the Hall of Fame. I mean, just think about this. Think about the most important position in the NFL. It's quarterback. Think about the people that have won Super Bowls and how they go to the Hall of Fame. He didn't just win like, Baltimore won 1 with Trent Dilfer. Okay. You know, he won 3 with Mark Rippon and Joe Theismann and Doug Williams, none of whom on merit is going to go to the Hall of Fame. You could make a case for Theismann, but it's, you know, it's not particularly compelling. And Gibbs won with 3 different quarterbacks. And Gibbs won because the thing that stayed the same was the offensive line. The offensive line is the most famous part of the great Washington Redskins teams, the Hogs. Here are the people who we associate most with the Hogs, because this was the starting lineup for the first 2 Super Bowls. Joe Jacoby, George Stark, Mark May, Russ Grimm, Jeff Bostic. I'm quite certain that Russ Grimm is in the Hall of Fame. I don't know Jacoby's in the Hall of Fame. I think there's only one. Am I right in this, Nigel? The only one.
Right. Yeah, Grimm. Yeah, Grimm's the only one.
Grimm's in. And 3 of them should be in. And I don't care which 3. It doesn't matter. You can pick them. It doesn't matter. Later on, Jim Lachey became a charter member of the Hogs. Raleigh McKenzie, Ed Simmons were charter members of the Hogs. The tight ends, Doc Walker and Donnie Warren. And then the honorary hog, because they used to meet in a shed after practice and drink, the honorary hog was Riggins. Riggins was the recipient of the Hogs plowing the field. John Riggins went to the Hall of Fame. John Riggins at one point was the oldest back in the NFL to gain over 1,000 yards, and he gained 1,200 one year. You know, because he was so great and because they were so great. That was Joe Bugle's legacy. It was the offensive line. And it was the most famous part of the Washington Redskins. More famous, obviously, than three different quarterbacks. And you might say Art Monk or Gary Clark. I don't think so. Even Darryl Green, as great as Darryl Green was, I think people looked at that team and said, the Hogs are the people we care the most about. And that was Joe Bugle. And Joe Gibbs was actually, and I think he would admit this, Joe Gibbs was totally blessed by the fact that he had Richie Pettibone calling the defense and Joe Bugle doing the offensive line. At halftime, at every game, he would say to Richie Pettibone, so, you know, what should we do? And Richie said, let's change this. And then it was a shutout for the next half. Richie Pettibone, like Joe Bugle, not a very good head coach. I mean, Joe Bugle had bad teams. I mean, he was hired to coach bad teams. He didn't particularly improve them, I don't think. I don't know this off the top of my head, but I doubt he ever made the playoffs because I think he would have had a longer run in Arizona and a longer run with the Raiders had he made the playoffs. I could be wrong about that. But he knew what he was doing on the offensive line. He was just great at it. 80 years old, long run. You know, the kind of person who I don't think you'd hear any of his players have a bad word about him. And he molded these lines and he used all these different people and he, you know, got the most out of them. And they became interchangeable. And they were better for the Redskins than they were for anybody else. And which sometimes happens when you've got a good coach. So I did want to mention that. I wanted to mention one other thing, which was that I had the great privilege of playing golf with my son on Saturday. The rest of the foursome was our friend Steve Rose and the great Kip Scheman.
A surprise appearance.
Kip Scheman wrote his way into what was a threesome and made it a foursome, complained early and often, and then said, I shouldn't complain. I'm not going
to
complain anymore.
Showed up late.
Yeah, we'd already hit tee shots when he wandered down from the range, complained about his back, although he hits it far. He's strong.
He hits it hard. He aims about 45
to
degrees
the right.
To the right and just tries to hit a topspin pull back into the fairway. I wonder why his back hurts.
Right.
And what's so great is he always complains. So Dad and I were playing against Kip and
Steve Rose.
He always
I'm not
complains.
Really playing against anybody. Michael
he always
is.
Complains about the shots. And there, I think, one up after one, Steve makes a nice 4-for-3. I miss an 8-footer for birdie. And I just to get under Kip's skin, I say in the second tee ball, just so you know, Dad moves up to the golds, and Greg doesn't adjust the scorecard, so he's getting some extra pops.
Yeah.
So he's starting already. It's in his head. He goes, I'm not going to say anything.
Just tell me when we're two down so I can press.
Which, of course, we get to after the 14th hole, and his eyes light up
he's
as he
pressing.
Calls a press, and he goes, this is where the match really starts. By 16, he's dumped 3 or 4 in the water, and he's lying prone on the edge of a pond.
Right. So we had a wonderful time, and I don't want to bury the lead, but it is not often when you watch your boy shoot 66 with 6 birdies and 2 bogeys and a couple of great par saves, but 2 remarkable chip-ins on 14 and 17. 17 from the – describe your first swing. Describe where you were on 17.
17 is a short par 4 In fairness, we're playing from the white tee.
Playing
so
from the
we're
white.
Playing up, and you have a lot of wedges in your hands. But at that point, I was 3 under, wanted to try and knock it on the green or front bunker. I'm in the fescue, hard to find the ball. Thanks, Krim, for helping us out there. We got it. We're in play. I'm in the fescue, huge clump. And if you play golf, you know, the hosel can get caught, shuts it down, the ball doesn't go anywhere. So I'm now hitting 3 about 2 feet behind
you took
where
a, you took a swing
took
and the
a,
ball went nowhere.
Ball goes nowhere. So at that point, I'm thinking, let's just get out of here with a bogey, knock this up front of the green 2-putt, let's go. So I swing hard, don't even look at where the ball goes. And all of a sudden, I see Kip throwing his arms up in the air going, it's in! It's in!
Michael made 2 birdies that he didn't see on 2 chip-ins that he was blocked from the hole itself. I saw the second one. Not the first one. So that was that. Steve gave you the card. I mean, that ties your low from the whites.
It's right there. It's just one of the more bizarre rounds. So Kip, as soon as I pitch on the first,
Kevin then started to root for Michael against his own bet, but in true Kip Scheman form, did not pay off at the end of the round.
Oh, straight to the car.
Yeah, right to the car.
So as soon as I make my this, it's a pitch in on 14 behind the green. I'm short sighted. I throw up a lob into the breeze. It goes in. He starts then looking back, going, "What would the odds be if someone said, could you see a more unlikely pitch in today's round?" And we started thinking it was going to be a three ball. So I show up a little bit late, just thinking it's going to be the three of us will go out. We'll play pretty fast. And then I see Steve Rose talking to the great Marty West on the range. And I start to get a little nervous saying, I might actually have to show up today.
You got
to
play with Marty.
So I start dialing in the wedges, and it's a good thing I did. He ended up not playing with us. He was the
guy behind
us.
But we're going to play. We're going to play in a couple
of
weeks.
And that was sort of got me ready for the day.
So anyway, so that was really nice. I was really proud. I called a couple of people, and I just said, I'm just saying this because I'm very proud. You know, I've watched you shoot under. I kept score for you once, I think, when you shot 67 or something like that. And I think, did you ever, at Rehoboth, did you get 67 on a par 72 at one point?
I have.
You know, so that always makes me very happy. To show you the disparity in games, not only am I playing from further the tees that are so far up that, you know, it's a joke that I'm not better. Michael beat me by 30 shots. I had 96. 30 shots, so I didn't help
out. What's so great
out.
Is that now I often play up to try and play with the group because it's nice to have those moments on the tee, even when you have to be a little farther apart. So to then see you get into your cart, zip off to the gold tees, you take half a practice swing, top a drive 150 yards down the fairway, then we don't see you for a hole.
Yeah, well, that happens. I'm no good, but I enjoy playing.
And,
so what's,
and you
I'm
now
bragging.
Are at this point where you have a putt that counts for the match. It matters. And you just look at the opponent, you just look at Kip and go, the next one's good. You don't even, the ball doesn't stop and you pick it up and walk to the next.
Yeah, I mean, it's no point. I'm terrible, but I enjoy myself. So we'll get out of here. Will Wilbon join us when we return?
That's right.
Michael Wilbon, when we return, I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Simply Safe part. What's the number one sign of a bad home security system? A home security system that's so complicated you never use it. Yeah, why would you do it? Why would you buy it? If you're not going to use it, what is the point? This is exactly the type of security system Simply Safe has spent a decade fighting against. They believe that simple is safer, and it's exactly why Simply Safe is the home security for right now, when feeling safe at home has never been more important. Simply Safe was designed to be easy to use while protecting your whole home 24/7. Order online with the click of a button, open the box, place the sensors, plug it in, and your home is protected around the clock. No technician or salesperson has to come and disrupt your house. You don't need to pay any outrageous monthly fees or sign a 2-year contract. And now it says in bold copy, tell a personal story about setting up Simply Safe or about Simply Safe if possible. So let's go backwards. Open the box. I can do that. Place the sensors. Zero chance. Plug it in. Zero chance. Yeah. Simply Safe was named best overall home security of 2020 by U.S. News and World Report. And their 24/7 professional monitoring and emergency dispatch starts at 50 cents a day. Head to simplysafe.com/Tony and get free shipping and a 60-day money-back guarantee. That is simplysafe.com/Tony. Make sure when you go to it, you understand to spell simply as S-I-M-P-L-I. simplysafe.com/Tony.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Crooked Coast. And Robert Dundon writes in to us. Summer's arrived and we should be playing the landfall in Falmouth here on Cape Cod. Instead, we're writing and recording new music and bringing it to the masses via video concerts and on a flatbed truck driving through Woodsall. Our latest song, Rise and Shine, pays tribute to our friends who live fast and shine so bright that even after their passing, their light is still with us. We're just musicians, but we like to think our music not only brings that much-needed distraction in these tough times, but also a hope to people that gives them the strength and confidence to move forward towards a safer and happier time. Luke, John, Ben, and Shaq, the boys from Crooked Coast, they play in Michael Wilbon, who is out of the West and out of the heat and into the East and into the humidity. And I did want to talk a little bit about Arizona because, I mean, I watch the news, and I know we've talked about this before, and Arizona and Texas and Florida in particular are the places where they've had huge spikes. Arizona not nearly as populated as either Texas or Florida, which plays into what I'm going to ask. The governors of Texas and Florida are trying to go backwards on bars and restaurants. The governor of your second state, Arizona, has made no such indication that he's going to do that. You've left friends there. I mean, you have a community there. What are they doing, and how did this happen, the big spikes there, which may not be like a big spike in California is different than a big spike in Arizona.
Well, yeah, because Arizona didn't have many cases at the beginning. Not just the beginning, Tony. Something like one-third of Arizona's total cases have come in the last 2 weeks.
Wow.
A third of the total number of cases.
Yeah.
So Arizona was cruising along. Arizona's that classic case of anything in life where you're cruising along. And people get sloppy. They take it for granted. You know, and so when you talk about what happened, Arizona didn't even have a mandatory wearing of mask policy till 2 weeks ago. People weren't wearing them.
Yeah.
And so because the number of cases were not high in March, April, and even May, so everything opened back up, and people were like, yeah, we're done. We're good. And, you know, that certainly wasn't the case. For people who believe, that's something that's hitting New York. We don't have to worry about that. I think the difference, the big difference in the state you talked about, everything you described is right on the money. I think I left on Friday, but something like 5,800 cases on say Wednesday or Thursday, that dropped to 3,500. So all of a sudden, you started seeing the grouping in these stories of Texas and Florida, but Arizona's name had dropped out. I don't know if that just came from wearing of masks or if there was something else. The total dropped. It was like, wow. Now, it's still 2 weeks ago, Tony, 1,000 cases was the record. 1,000. It was just like, wow, 1,000 cases in Arizona. And that went up to more than 5,000 in no time. So getting back to 3,500, while it was no longer 5,900, it wasn't, you know, a few hundred either. So I don't know. So much of that is in Old Town reservations and nursing homes.
Yeah.
That were getting hit hard. And so I can tell you this, having left, you know, Arizona. I was in Arizona Friday. I was in Chicago. I spent the day in Chicago, 24 hours in Chicago, Saturday and Sunday, and then here in D.C., it's so wildly different.
It is, isn't it?
I can't even tell you.
It is.
Everything in Arizona, the cases were spiked. There's no question. Cases are way, 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 way up. It wasn't Florida or Texas. But the cases are way, 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 way up. But, Tony, your life, you were going about your life. Everything was open. And there was starting to be traffic. There was traffic in Arizona on Friday. Was it the traffic of the nation's, you know, sixth largest city, you know, from November or January? No, it wasn't.
Right.
But there was still traffic. Tony, when I flew into D.C. last night, it's about 8 o'clock, so it's still light enough to see. And I'm on that routing that comes in when you get the great view from Chicago. You often get the great view of the monument and the Capitol and the Lincoln Memorial. And Tony, there was nothing moving. That was like Arizona for like 20 days in March. March. That's how different it is. And Chicago and D.C. are very closely, you know, aligned in terms of what is open. Like, I couldn't, like, find a place to have breakfast in Chicago yesterday because people were just opening on Friday. So it was very much a Friday, Saturday situation, and they were changing and they were closing streets to allow people, restaurants, to put tables outside. Arizona, I was doing the normal stuff that I do to an extent. I wasn't going in restaurants. I was eating outdoors. But it was just night and day, and I haven't even been in D.C. I haven't seen D.C. yet other than flying over it. Flying over D.C. last night, it looked like, I don't know, it looked like nothing I've ever seen. There wasn't a car moving at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, I think what happened is, I think that this particular area, Northern Virginia, which opened up a little faster than Maryland, Hogan shut it down in Maryland, and Bowser shut it down in Washington, D.C., and people got used to not having traffic and not having crowds. Now, once you, like, the critical mass is the opening of bars. That changes everything.
Yeah,
I would say don't open them, but, you know, nobody's going to listen to me. But that changes everything. Now, you're gonna go downtown and go into the studio. How do you feel about that? They won't let me in the studio.
I just don't have those reservations. I may have it.
You may.
I don't want to sound like I'm as careless as the place where I just came from, where people just said, yeah, we're done. I'm not saying anything about we're done. I'm not saying, oh, there are no cases and this is over. No. Sorry, I'm not a Republican governor or higher. I don't have that wildly delusional sentiment. But I'm also not just sort of personally afraid. I've been going into a studio every day for the past 100. I spent 100 days in Arizona, 100. And I've never spent 100 straight days without going anywhere. I've never spent 30 straight days anywhere as an adult until now. 30. I'm not sure 20. I'm on planes. I'm moving. And to go into the nation's airports, three of the busy, you know, the one that is sometimes the busiest airport, O'Hare looked like a weak Sunday yesterday. That's a huge rebound. O'Hare had, you know, they had fast food open, and, you know, and the terminal I was in, and Sky Harbor, you know, it looked like a really weak Sunday. Like, you'd walk in and say, wow, there's not much going on today. Of course, DCA looked when I left in March, which was there's nobody happening.
No.
All three of them were, you know, way, way off. But O'Hare wasn't way, way off. And I don't know what that's indicative of. I don't know if that's a forecast of a return to something. The planes I was on were, the two planes I was on were, I don't know, they were 70% full maybe. And so I'm not afraid of trying something. Again, I haven't been, it's like indoor restaurants. I was in one in Scottsdale, one of my favorite places, where it's just a large, huge place, the kind of restaurant we don't have in Washington very much of. And you can be spaced. I mean, the tables were 15 feet apart. You just weren't threatened.
So I want to ask you about school. I watched this thing the other day. I was watching the news, and it was a piece on Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. And how Notre Dame was going to open early, like real early, and get everybody out by Thanksgiving because they were afraid of a second wave.
Right.
And, you know, when we can debate second wave, first wave, all we want. But that was their plan. You are intimately involved with Northwestern. What are they going to do? And Notre Dame said they were going to reduce class size by a minimum of 50%. And I wish the follow-up question had been, and it wasn't, well, are you going to run all night? Are you going to run all night? Because
Tony, there's so much they don't know. I mean, just like we talk about every day with football,
right?
And because I am involved intimately with the planning of this at Northwestern, where we plan right now to open a week earlier than we do. We're the last Northwestern, Stanford, a handful of schools that are on the quarter system. We normally open, Tony, close to October. I mean, we're like late, September 20s late. My first year of school when I was a kid was, when I was in college, was like September 27. So we're going to open a week earlier, which is like now like September 13 or 14. That's a week early for us. What are we doing about class size? Some of those same things. There's only so many things you can do, even when you're a relatively small school. Notre Dame is bigger than we are, but we're still fewer than 10,000 undergraduates. So, What are they going to do? I mean, it's still theory. You don't know what you're going to do.
Right.
You're going to try to open the doors.
Right.
It's like this notion that football is absolutely going to be played. So let's talk about the matchups.
No, it's crazy.
Sorry. Matchups. Yeah. What are you saying? Let me ask you something about college football. So you have programs now, particularly ones in the South, that basically try to report to football camp, you know, in June, because they get, their schools are out in April almost. They have 25 and 27 and 28 people testing positive now.
Yeah, they want to spread it all the way through so they're ready to play.
What happens, Tony, when these kids actually try to go to class? Whether it's only a third of them in class.
No. I don't know.
And by the way, let's say they're getting tested every day because that's what football programs will do and schools will spend the money for anything for football. Let's say they're all testing every day and they are, and it's contained. What happens when they go to class and they're dealing with students who have it and aren't being tested every day at all? The student body's not going to be tested every day.
No.
They're not. Most of my school didn't have a football dorm. We don't have football anything. You go to class. You are in a dormitory. What happens? I mean, the notion of college football being played, it to me just seems to be, what are you people talking about? But, you know, but it's mid-June, late June. I don't know.
I'll ask you one real sports question. I don't know if it's a stunner because we've thought about it, but it happened. Cam Newton's going to go to the Patriots. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Cam Newton has greatness in him. We know that. And I'm sure that in the case of Bill Belichick and the Patriots, and the staff, the whole staff, whoever's on it, they figure if somebody has greatness in it, they can get it out of them regularly enough to win a championship. My question about Cam Newton is, how's that going to work with him? Because he didn't produce greatness all the time, like the Patriots expect and often get. He produced it kind of once. What's going to happen? What's the deal like with that? Is he serious enough, and is he committed enough to deal with this Bill Belichickian way every day? Maybe he is. I don't know. I don't know enough. And everybody just sort of, nobody wants to even ask that question from the coverage I saw last night. Like, does Cam Newton have that in him? Is he going to be is he the guy like you now have to be, and particularly in New England, where basically you live your life at that facility and that's all you're committed to? That's it. I don't know the answers to those things, and nobody seems to want to broach that. It's intriguing. It sounds great. And if he is willing to let them tap into him like other people have been, then there's something special that can be brought. By the way, how's that Buffalo is automatically winning the AFC East? How's that looking today?
This is a very good point you raise about Cam Newton. There is no question of the talent. The question is, well, there's two questions. One, physically. How is he physically? And two, he's never been coached. There's nobody like Belichick. There's nobody like that in all of sports, probably. No. And if you are not willing to do what they want in New England, it'll be a disaster.
No, it won't be a disaster. That's the one that I'll park company out there. You just sit. You will go away.
Well, that's it. I mean, Jared Stidham will be starter.
Jared Stidham's good.
Maybe.
Tom Brady was not. Tom Brady in college was not Cam Newton.
Not even close. Tom Brady. That's
so
right.
To me, the notion that these people don't have some big name, therefore they're not. So what? It's the Patriots. Presuming that the Patriots are going to fall flat because they don't have famous people. I mean, what are people paying attention to? So he'll sit. He'll go away. They'll just sit him. And people will come to the press conference and they'll say, you know, Bill, he's so great. He's got all this in him, and he can run, and he can do this. And Belichick will say, yes, Stidham's our quarterback.
That's exactly what he was saying.
People don't pay attention to anything now. They just go, they want to go crazy. And the hype in sports, I understand we're missing sports. I get it. But the hype for every single thing is so intolerable for me. I can't watch the hype. The hype on everything. It's just like, can you just stop? The sport isn't being played yet. And you want to talk about matchups and what Cam is going to do week four. I have no stomach for it. And I know that today is going to be an overreaction Monday like nothing we've seen since Brady left. You know, New England to go to Tampa in March or whenever that was. This is going to be... This is going to be so out of control. It sickens me already, and we haven't even gotten near time to do our show today.
All right, well, you'll be able to say that on the air. I'll see you later. All right,
be good.
Thanks. Michael Wilbon, boys and girls. We'll take a break. Jason LaConfora of CBS Sports will join us, and we will also talk about Cam Newton at great length. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the ad for the Perry Mason show, which I have not yet seen. Nigel has seen it. I'm going to do the ad and talk to Nigel about it. HBO's next must-watch series, Perry Mason, stars Emmy winner Matthew Rhys. I like his wife. Matthew Rhys didn't care much for me one way or the other. In an origin story for American fiction's most legendary criminal defense lawyer. Catch up on the series The Washington Post called Superb and Vanity Fair lauds as engrossing and unpredictable. Set in 1930s L.A., Mason finds that uncovering the truth means exposing a city full of corruption and everybody is guilty. Co-starring fellow Emmy winners Tatiana Maslany and John Lithgow. Perry Mason airs Sundays at 9 p.m. on HBO, and you can stream it on HBO Max. Now, you've watched the first two episodes, right?
I have indeed, yes, and love it. I think it's
And how
terrific.
Good is Matthew Rhys? You like him.
Yeah, well, I'm inclined to like him because I've liked him in everything he's done.
Yeah.
But that's because he's great in everything he does, and he really sinks his teeth into this one. It's really great. It's dark, and he's looking into a really grim murder. But he's just fantastic. I can't recommend this highly enough.
That's good to know. All right, we'll be back.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a song called Nitro. It comes to us from Bees, B-E-E-S. Bees Deluxe, busier than ever. And this is written by their guitarist, Conrad Ware, W-A-R-R-E. Nitro is a true collaborative effort that features legendary drummer, producer, composer, Poogie Bell. Bell volunteered to provide the drum track as part of his lockdown recording series, and he proclaimed the tune a trip. We like this. We like this. Nitro is available on all major digital platforms and is the first release from an in-progress LP of original tunes that the band is recording. It's available on Spotify, iTunes, and Amazon. Bees, B-E-E-S. Bees Deluxe. Not wood bees, but regular bees. Jason Lockenfor of CBS joins us now. We'll get into some football and whether or not they'll actually play. You just heard Michael Wilbon express tremendous doubt that football will be played and express, you know, wonderment at Cam Newton going to New England, which we'll talk about with Jason. But let us start with how's your radio show? How is the discipline of doing this hours and hours every day? How is that?
I really enjoy it, Tony. I do. I wish there were more games to talk about. And
yeah.
This guy's on a hot streak, and the Orioles should send this guy to the minors. Oh, there are no hot streaks. Oh, there are no minor leagues. Oh, hopefully we have some major leagues, and obviously, you know, football and everything else. But there's this sort of constant tension between, you know, what we want and maybe what we're going to be able to have. And I just kind of keep going back and forth as we plan out these shows with trying to deal with the idea that sports may have done all they can to make this happen, and we as a country maybe didn't do enough. And that sort of juxtaposition, and then also trying to obviously provide some frivolity, some escape, and all that stuff. But it's just a very unusual time, as you well know. So, I really enjoy it. I've waited for the opportunity for a long time, and we're trying to make the most of it every single day.
Good. So let's pretend there's going to be football. That'll be the question on the back end of this. But the front end of this is to pretend that there's going to be football and that the Patriots are going to have Cam Newton. The Patriots had some of the players had at least said that Jarrett Stidham looked very good last year working scout teams and in practice and this, that, and the other thing. And maybe he will still start. But if you sign Cam Newton, I don't think you start him to be a backup. Wilbon had a very interesting read on this, which was that, yes, there's greatness in Cam Newton, but is he willing to do the kinds of things that Bill Belichick and the Patriot organization demand, the 100% commitment that Cam Newton may or may not have shown in the past for other coaches? What is your overall assessment of them getting Cam Newton?
They definitely do believe that Jarrett Stidham can be a winning football player for them, and they were very enthused by what he did last year in the preseason and in training camp and in practices through the season and running the scout team. And he showed an ability to grasp their offense. And they felt like he compared very favorably to all the quarterbacks in this draft, except for perhaps, you know, the first couple. Burrow and Tua, probably, you know, better prospects. But when you right. start talking about Herbert and Love, they feel like Stidham is just as good and has as much upside. Those two who I just mentioned, Herbert and Love, they're not going to play any football this year. And now at this point, I don't think Stidham will either. At a certain point, you know, we all thought that this made a ton of sense and that with the way this landscape shaped out, that this is the quintessential Bill Belichick move. You get an MVP-caliber player on the cheap at your price at a time where the market benefits you and really nobody else. And eventually, you know, Cam Newton was either going to take this bargain basement sort of starting contract or he was going to wait and see if quarterbacks started getting hurt. But at this point, there might not be a preseason and there might not be too much of a training camp where guys do get hurt. Teams are still trying to figure out how much 11-on-11 can they really do. How many guys can we get in the building at once? So I get it all the way around. I thought Cam Newton might wait to see if something else developed to where he could have some leverage other than sort of a take-it-or-leave-it opportunity from New England. But it's such a strange offseason for so many reasons. And this is Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels, and it is, you know, a dynastic franchise. I think those days are over, but, you know, they were in the playoffs last year. So it's kind of been sitting there and everybody's saying, well, 2 + 2 looks like it equals 4. Will it at some point? And now it does. And you remember McDaniels drafted Tebow in the first round when he was in Denver. This is a shape-shifting offense that's willing to emphasize different position groups and different ways to attack the field in the run game or the pass game every single week. Whatever we can do to be the smartest we can be to try to win a football game. And I suspect now they reinvent themselves yet again. And I think you'll see a lot of the concepts that the Ravens are utilizing with great success. They aren't gifted with a lot of deep downfield receivers. They don't really have a number one receiver to speak of. You know, the tight ends, they drafted a couple of them. That position group stunk last year without Gronk. We'll see how much these kids upgrade it, but I think you see a lot of heavy personnel, just like Baltimore, a lot of 2 and 3 tight end sets that they can run out of and they can throw out of. And I don't think they'll have to worry about getting any buy-in from Cam whatsoever. This guy is a super competitive athlete. This guy, up until he started getting hurt the last 2 years, had never really lost at anything in his life, not high school, not college. And he had been a winning player in the NFL and, you know, had almost won a Super Bowl. He's been an MVP. He has a unique skill set. He's a different sort of caliber athlete than you can find almost anywhere. And the brain trusted in New England understands what it has, and it understands some of its limitations offensively. And I think Cam knows that this is a one-year audition for the rest of the league to show if he can stay healthy. And this guy was playing at a super high level in 2018 in North Turner's offense, you know, before these injuries started really creeping in and stealing the last year and a half of his career. So I think they can have success with him in the pocket, and I think they can have success with him out of the pocket. I still don't love the rest of the roster. I still have reservations about them being the best team in that division, and I haven't said that in it feels like 2 decades. But he's definitely an upgrade over Stidham, and in a really weird offseason, and in what could be a very strange season, this, again, has always been sitting there looking like it made all the sense in the world, and it did.
If you run him, because you mentioned doing something like they're doing in Baltimore, with a much younger quarterback and maybe a faster quarterback, not as powerful, but faster, you risk getting him hurt? He's been hurt for a couple of years. Do you think he wants that? Do you think he wants to run?
I think he wants to win, and I think he understands that these guys are going to try to put this team in position to win. And he has often been the most physically dominant player on the football field.
Absolutely.
From the quarterback position. And in a lot of the games in his career, I mean, there's been games where he's been more physical than the linebackers on his team, more physical than the linebackers on the other team. You know, he has a nose for the end zone. He is an incredibly productive football player in moving the ball around, whether it's with his feet or with his arm. Do I think he's going to run as much as Lamar last year? No, I don't think we're going to see anything like that again. But is he going to run, I don't even know how to quantify it, 20 times more, 50 times more than what they did with Tom Brady, which was literally only, you know, fourth down sneaks, you know, moving the pile on fourth and short? Yeah, he is. They have to incorporate that element. It's part of what he does so well. And this is, again, a franchise that's always catering what they can do to what the player does best. So for them to ignore that, I think, wouldn't be smart for them as a team. And let's face it, they're trying to win right now. They're not, you know, trying to develop Cam for somebody else. And also for Cam, I mean, part of what makes Cam Cam is the ability to be that physical presence, to be that sort of unstoppable force. And after all this time away from the game, and as driven as he is, I'm sure he wants to show as well that, hey, I'm still that guy.
Okay, that's good. That's great analysis. Let me broaden this out a little bit, which is the sort of skepticism that we are all prone to in the last few months, which is not only how can they play pro football, but is Malcolm Jenkins, how many people does he speak for when he says, you know what, I just don't think they can keep us safe. I don't know that this is going to work at all.
Well, I think he speaks for a lot of guys in a lot of sports. I mean, we've talked to MLS, you know, players on our show, and you've seen a lot of what NBA players have had to say, and that's a bubble, or at least something close to a bubble. The
yes.
NFL isn't doing a
no.
bubble. It's
no.
not even pretending to do a bubble. And the economies of human scale involved in the NFL, just to get through a single practice, the numbers are so much greater, and that means the sort of the probabilities are greater, right? That somebody slips up, that somebody goes out when they shouldn't, that somebody does something, you know, I won't even say silly. I mean, a lot of these guys are young. You kind of think you're impervious. Oh, it won't be that big of a deal. We'll just go do this. We'll just go do that. I mean, and it could also be a bus driver. It could be somebody in the marketing side of the building. It could be somebody who works, you know, in the grounds crew. It's going to be impossible to keep all these people separated and in a mask and with gloves on and whatever through the course of a daily football day. So I think there's a lot of trepidation amongst people who will be in those settings with ostensibly, you know, larger numbers of people than you would like, and then leaving the families, and the more we find out about the effect, the numbers of young people who are being, you know, who are being infected, and then also the expansion of sort of who are the vulnerable groups, and that now very much seems to include, you know, pregnant women. And there's a lot of guys in the NFL and a lot of guys, you know, in their mid-20s and late-20s, and they're having kids. And they are going to be going back and forth from work to their house. So there are still so many questions that abound, Tone. And we're almost into July, and that's the month where this is supposed to kick off. And I have maintained fervently, and Lord knows we've talked a lot about this, that all these parties will do everything within reason to start this thing. And I think to some degree they will be able to start this thing. I just don't know what it might end up taking. That could go well beyond reason into sort of areas so remote and so far flung that at some point the numbers in this country, the numbers in the NFL, what's going on in some of these NFL cities may just force this to grind to a halt because of the number of people getting sick or the number of resources that it's requiring to keep this machine running in the NFL in some cities where there aren't enough resources, there aren't enough beds, there might not be enough tests, or we're telling everybody that we've shut it down again how can that not apply to these guys too, you know, who require hundreds of people in their buildings every day. I'm just not sure the math is going to make sense for whatever a preseason looks like, no games, 3 weeks of practice, whatever, and then ostensibly 20 weeks of games. I'm not sure that machine's going to hold up.
No, I appreciate your time. I will just say this, and I've said this to Wilbon and said this on the air. I think everything's going to start. I just think if you have an end date, you're crazy because you're not going to get it on the end date you want it, you know, because it's going to stop.
Right.
It's going to stop and start and stop and start, and the seasons of 2021 are in play right now because of this. So if you're going to start it and your goal, a lot easier in the NBA to get a champion than it is in the NFL, you still have to be prepared to stop. You do. You have to be prepared to stop. So, anyway.
Yeah, it's thrown a monkey wrench at everybody else. You would tend to think that that's coming from the NFL here at some point, too.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, guys.
That's how's Copper?
He's right here. Oh, there,
there he is. All right, that's great. All right, we'll talk soon. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks, guys.
Jason Lockenfora with his dog, Copper. It's always nice to hear from the dog. We will take a break. We'll come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a new ad. This is for Fitbod.
I might have to explain this one a little bit to
Michael
you.
Michael is in charge of the commercials that we ultimately agree to, and Michael likes Fitbod, and it says, whether you're new to the gym or you've been lifting weights for years, it's hard to find the right workout program and stick to it. If you've ever gone to the gym without a plan, you know how overwhelming the weight room can feel. Even with a trainer, it can be hard to know if you're pushing yourself too much or not enough. But with Fitbod, you get a truly personalized fitness program that adapts as you go.
Yeah, and they have an algorithm that'll match where you've been and give you recommendations going forward. And I don't want to embarrass Nigel, but oftentimes after the show, we talk about what we're doing in our spare time, and Nigel loves going for runs, loves working out. Used to work with a personal trainer, not right now, obviously, with our current situation. And even as gyms start to open up, what's great about Fitbod, it can give you recs even if you don't have available gym equipment.
This is in your house, Fitbod.
It can be. This is an app that you can take with you.
Okay. Yes. So it says, it wants me to personalize these
ideas.
And
that's where Nigel can start to work for
you.
It
says, I love that I can pick workouts tailored to my equipment and goes, look. People who know this show know that I work with Helen. Okay, I work with Helen. I'd like to get back to working with Helen. I'm old and I'm nervous about going into a gym. Me personally, if I had this app, I wouldn't use it. Because I'm an old man. I know who I am. But if you're young and you're vibrant and you're physically capable, Michael, you like this idea.
I do like this idea, and that's why with our account, we have Nigel, who's going to be using this going forward.
Nigel's going to do it. Fitbod combines the knowledge of fitness pros with a powerful machine learning algorithm to give you a workout program that maximizes your results. You get a program tailored to your unique body, experience, and environment. It's perfect for anyone who's looking to get better fitness results, whether your goal is general fitness, strength training, muscle tone, bodybuilding, powerlifting. Always want to be a powerlifter.
Nigel does have a unique body.
Yes. Well, we all do. Or Olympic weightlifting. It's easy to use. It even has HD video tutorials to make learning new exercises a breeze. It integrates with other fitness and health apps like Apple Health, Fitbit, and Strava. I've never heard of that. Anyway, it's $9.99 a month or $59.99 a year, and you can try 1 month of workouts absolutely free. Always do that if you have the opportunity. Get a personalized fitness plan that helps you work out smarter at fitbod.me/Tony. Try Fitbod for free for 1 month when you sign up today at fitbod.me/Tony. Fitbod is F-I-T-B-O-D. That's 1 free month when you sign up at fitbod.me/Tony.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your emails, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all of you.
That's a professional musician doing something really good. That's Tim Wildsmith of Nashville. It's better than Gary's. We love Gary, but it's better than Gary's. That'll just about do it for us today. After the mailbag, I have to go pick up my friend Mo Green. He was getting a massage this morning. I hope he can see me on my way in. Thanks to our guests today, Michael Wilbon and Jason Lockin, four of CBS Sports. Thanks as well to our sponsors, Fitbod, Simply Safe, and HBO's new show, Perry Mason. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From Dan in Alexandria, Virginia, a brief description of the game 24 is in order, as it is quite easy and fun when played correctly. This is the license plate game. As you know, you're given four numbers, the last four numbers on a license plate. The goal of the game is to use mathematical operations to get to a total of 24. You can use addition, subtraction, multiplication, or division in any combination, but can only use each original number one time. For example, let's use 2, 4, 6, 8. You could do 2 times 6 is 12, and 8 plus 4 is 12, so 12 plus 12 is 24. Or 8 divided by 4 is 2, and 2 plus 2 is 4, and 6 times 4 is 24. Okay, that's fine. That's not how I understood the game at all. Not at all. I thought you added them up, and that's why I said that 18 made more sense than 24. Now that I understand the game, I hate the game. It's too complicated. I'm not going to play the game.
This is going to ruin your drive to Rehoboth.
From Sean Isk, or Iski, in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, right outside Minneapolis. On Friday's podcast, you asked why the four-digit license plate number game uses 24 instead of 18, which is the midpoint of the low end and the high end of the possibilities of all mathematical sums. The answer is that this game is played to allow for addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. And so, yes, I understand, but I don't want to do that. I'm a simple man. I add things up. I get a number. I move on.
PEMDAS.
You know, I'm not, you know, I was an English major. I understand the higher theories of mathematics.
You're looking for the symbolism.
They're beyond me. Mathematics is beyond me. When it rains, that's where I am, because I can say it's either a cleansing rain or it's a terrible prognosticating rain. I can give you symbolism, as Michael said. That's what I do. Chris McKinnon, Glens Falls, New York, home of my college roommate Dave Carpenter, and home also of Barry Melrose. My daughter is about to turn 16, so the person I'm related to by marriage, and I thought we would purchase her a car. I was also in need of a new vehicle, so we decided to buy them at the same time. Thanks to you, all I could think about was adding the numbers of the new license plates. I was on the edge of my seat when I first saw my daughter's plate, 84 plus 15, 99, very close, but not emailed to the show worthy. That's when it happened. Best day of my life kind of stuff. My car comes out and I see it, 84 plus 16, an even 100. Yet all I could think about was letting you know. Not sure that says about me, but I needed to share. Good. No, that's great. And shows me a picture of it. 84, 15, and then 84, 16 is 100. Mike O'Brien from Boston, formerly Revere. As you were explaining the 24 license plate game, I was walking to my local grocery store, which conveniently opened up in the basement of the Boston Garden about a year ago. This is very helpful because many people don't have cars in the north and west end of the city, and now there's a walking distance store, but I digress. As I was listening to you explain the game, I just so happened to walk by a number of cars parked on the street, so I started to play. I'd say I walked by about 15 cars, and none of them added up to 24. They're mostly in the 15 to 21 range. And I didn't keep track of the numbers of cars or which each car added up to, or even take an average of what the cars added up to. But I hope my research helps your cause. What do I win for this? It's so wonderful. Carla Corrado. There was a formula going around social media helping people pick their fictional Kentucky Derby horse's name. You list a symptom of one of your mental illnesses, plus the last thing you ate, to get the name of your Derby contestant. My horse's name may be Self-Blame Salad. Would you go with Anxiety Bagel or Obsessive Compulsive Chicken Parm? And they're off. It's brilliant, by Carla. David in Rockville. Calm down, O Great Orange. When the T-shirt has shipping added to the price, I just bought three. Yeah, but if you shipped all three together, you'd pay one shipping charge. I don't want to have to pay three different shipping charges, or now at minimum two different shipping charges. I ordered them all at the same time. I expect them to be sent to me at the same time. That's my point. Six words you won't hear on the Tony Kornheiser Show. Eric from Mifflinburg, quote, "This is the Eddie Bauer read." Yeah. Alex Lau in New York City. I'm putting together a video of well wishes from family and friends for my little brother's high school graduation. I was wondering if you and Wilbon could put together a video for him. I'll probably edit it heavily, but if you could make it around 15 minutes anyway, and then I can pick out the good stuff, I'd appreciate it. He's not attending the University of Maryland. Robert in Winnipeg, Canada. Robert Skolnicki. Because of the height difference between you and Michael, it would be proper to announce he's sitting 6'1.5" away from your Uncle Benny's table, which I mentioned this morning. We'll do a couple more. Josh Hirth, Cape Coral, Florida. Dr. Portheiser. Wait, that's not right. Anyway, do you think upon receiving the wine delivery, Tony Beeson will send in an all-new jingle titled I Have a New Pinot? If not, I think he's missing out on a wonderful jingle writing opportunity with Bells Up Winery. From Jeff Field in Wantagh on Long Island. Hey, Dr. Portheiser, love the story of the Seven of Hearts being put back together in your hand, even though you told it 1,000 times. You have any old Big East stories? Maybe about John Thompson and Lou Carnesecca? I'll hang up and wait. And from Audrey Toda, or Tada, T-O-D-A, in Woodside, California. My husband, Jacques Wilson, is a loyal little. He recently made a photo book for our 10-month-old daughter to learn members of the family. Naturally, you were included, as yours is one of the voices she hears the most. My husband is making sure she grows up knowing who is important in our family. That is so sweet. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Oh, yes, Nigel,
you missed the bagels.
Bethesda bagels.
Miss all the time.
I do. I'm terrible at my job.
Terrible.
BethesdaBagels.com. We love a mule as well. Several locations around the DMV. They're open from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Michael just had a bacon, egg, and cheese.
No separate shipping charges.
Right.
Yes.
Let's go through this again. If I order X amount of things at one time, I expect X amount of things at one time with a one-time shipping charge to be sent to me. I don't think that's unfair. Do you?
No one's arguing with you.
So what in God's name is this? I don't want three shipped separately. No. All right, goodbye.
Thank you, Mr. Tony.
Never gasp at the casket, have a laugh and whistle past it. Deep night, street bike, kill the lights, no sight, squeeze sight, feel the flutter in your stomach when you're gonna never gonna be the living dead. Forever and ever we can live instead, but nothing is forever, so you said, better get to living where you can. Rise and shine, we feeling fine, we'll go all night, making our own light, and it shines so bright. Never gonna be the living dead. Forever, ever, we can live instead. But nothing is forever, so you said, better get to living where you can. Rise and shine, you're feeling fine. We'll go all night, making our own light, and it shines so bright. We're feeling fine, time to rise and shine. We're feeling fine, we'll go all night, making our own light, and it shines so bright. Get the shovels, the ropes, and the rocks. When they close the lid on the box. When they close the lid on, they close the lid on. When they close the lid on the box. Get the shovels, the ropes, and the rocks. When they close the lid on, they close the lid on, they close the lid on the box. Rise and shine, we're feeling fine. We'll go all night, making our own light, and it shines so bright. Time to rise and shine. We're feeling fine. We're cool at night, making our own light, and it shines so bright. The sweetness above, I'm like, I'm feeling fine.
You mean?